Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Anyone else feel like they're talking like this time of year and sneezing and coughing and annoying your family while you're watching TV like I'm sure I do?
Well, yeah, I know that I am because my kids tend to tell me. Luckily for those of us who live with these symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease in as little as a half an hour, by the way. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
The crux of the whole thing is that, you know, I went from thinking I understood everything about my life, about where my career was going, where my relationship was going, family was stable. And then just systematically, one by one, very quickly, everything was taken away. And I went from this place of thinking, you know, that everything made sense to having no clue what I was doing. And feeling like any place I tried to grab onto something, there was nothing to hold on to. And I was in somewhat of disbelief for a while, and then in denial about it. And then slowly just, I had to reevaluate my entire life. And so I was also very surprised at how devastated I was at the loss of my dad. I think it's so naive that I thought that at the time, but I felt like I'm an adult. I'm an independent person. You know, I'm a successful human being. Why am I so broken by this? Like, why can I just not get up in the morning? And I mean, I just couldn't. And I felt like, where am I? Who am I? And what am I going to do? And I wandered around. I mean, I think I said this in the book too, that I, like, if you saw me, you would, on the street, I either looked like a crazy homeless person or like this angelic person that was kind of floating around like, hi, everyone. You know, like I was out of my body most of the time.
We've all been put here for a reason, and we all deserve acceptance.
Judging Megan with Megan Judge.
I'm a trauma survivor from a really young age, and I have been diagnosed with complex PTSD in the past few years. I've been surrounded by death and abuse much of my life. I've been dragged through the mud and have been to the point of not wanting to go on anymore. Through my interviews with other survivors, I've learned that there is a way out. From recovering to surviving and thriving, we all have the strength to come out the other side.
You are listening to Judging Megan.
Everyone, I am like beyond thrilled to have my guest on today. I feel like it's kismet that we were supposed to meet, if that's a word that I can mm-hmm. use. Mm-hmm. Alisa Donovan, thank you so much for coming on my show.
I am thrilled to be here. I'm really excited to have this chat, truly.
I'm going to start with everyone knows you from Clueless. And I will tell you that if you're of our age range, you've seen Clueless. I actually remember seeing Clueless, and I'm the like dork that bought the white Jeep Wrangler intro about Hollywood. I'm not kidding. Like, I thought I was Cher.
Oh my gosh.
I've talked about it in other episodes. So I had a white Jeep Wrangler. I thought I was Cher. Knew nobody, drove out to Hollywood to pursue my dreams of becoming an actress. And it's so funny because my niece, who's now 25, when she was young, I taught her whatever. When she was a baby, she would do it. And my sister would get so mad at me. And she'd be like, Megan, stop telling Maura to do whatever. When she was like a toddler, she would do it. It was so funny. So I know that I have a lot of fans that love you and are excited that you came on. So thank you again for coming on.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it.
So I really wanted to have you on today because obviously the people that listen to my podcast know that it's about, you know, trauma. Like, I'm a trauma survivor, overcoming obstacles in life. I always interview people that have gone through some sort of trauma and come out the other side. I'm all about signs. Mm-hmm. I'm like you. I'm about dreams. Yep. And so I've interviewed several authors, and in different ways, I feel like every book that I've talked about on this podcast has helped me in different ways. This book is absolutely, unbelievably, beautifully written. I felt like when I was reading that I was like, I could picture like every place where you were. I can't explain it. It was just like certain things in every chapter, like, hit me in different ways. Mm. When I read the very first chapter, I think you said something in the very beginning and you just said, I had to let it go. Like, it was time for me to let it go, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And when you decided to write this book, I know that you, was it during COVID or was it before COVID? When did you start writing it?
No, I had started writing the book years ago.
Okay.
Shortly, a couple of years after this happened. This is the thing, timing is everything. And I really do believe that projects like this, that to me it's part of my soul's work doing this book, and it's on its own timeline. So I wanted to have a book deal, 10 years ago. I didn't get one. we got close to getting one. I had a couple of chapters, written, and there was all this great feedback that the writing was so good, but the message was, the main notes were, it, she can't get out of her own darkness. And so I put it down. And then when I went back to it just before the pandemic, I realized, oh, I understand exactly what they're talking about. It's like we have to process enough and be able to metabolize enough to be able to create something that's helpful and identifiable to other people, But I think initially I was still too much in the muck of it and too much in the pain of it. And when I brought it back out with fresh eyes, I went, oh, one, this story is still so important. And two, I know how to make it better now. And so I just started to revise. And it was also because there is a film version of this that's in development. And we thought that we had the financing. And then at the last minute, I won't say why. Yes, it has something to do with Trump and putting the tariffs on China. Our investor backed out and we didn't have the money. So I went from thinking we were going into pre-production for this film going, oh, I guess I'm just going to be driving my daughter to summer camp every day. And I was mortified and so sad and so bummed out. And I said, I'm just going to go back to the book. I'm going to dive back into the book. And I did. I got a new book agent. The book agent read it and said, this is a beautiful book. I have to represent this book. And then everything just fell into place. And then I got the deal. You'll appreciate this as a parent in a pandemic of small children.
Yeah.
I signed the deal the day after what turned out to be my daughter's last day of school last spring. So I'm thinking they're going, you know, your first deadline of June 15th. I'm like, oh, that's no problem. Like, I work really fast. It's great. You know, it'll be fine. Thinking my husband will be back at the office and my daughter will be back in school in 2 weeks. And then, of course, we all know that never happened. No one left the house for a year. And so I had to write, do all the revisions, you know, with my daughter homeschooling and, you know, having breakdowns every 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. My husband working in the guest room. I set up an office basically in his closet, you know, and it was completely insane. Like, the whole thing was so crazy, but it just, you know, it, the timing was right. Like, I was.
And it's like, what's interesting. And I wrote notes. And when I tell you, I'm not like a huge reader, I've become a bigger reader because I have a podcast and I interview people and have to read their books. Mm-hmm. But I'm not a huge reader. I'm just not. And I'm more of a Real Housewives watcher, or like, I like to listen to a lot of podcasts. But I remember being on a vacation and I read the book about Carolyn Bessette Kennedy, written by Carol Razawell. Yes. And I had the same kind of like reaction to that book. This was years and years ago, and I can still remember. It was probably even before I had kids. So my oldest is 11. And I remember like folding pages and writing like little like notes and just loving, like, I think she's a beautiful writer. And something that just struck me was it reminded me of reading this book, just the way, like, you know, actors have such.
Love that. That makes actors me feel so good, because I do that with books that I love. So
yeah. I loved it. I loved it. And it's not just because you're on my podcast. I mean, I really wrote all these notes. And I think that actors have such, I'm married to an actor, so I can say this. I was an actress at one point in my life. They have just a reputation of not being very smart. And, you know, like, you're like, oh, who do you think you are? You're going to write a book, another actor writing a book. Right. But your writing is just, it's absolutely, and I know I keep saying this, but it's just so, it's so well written, just how descriptive it is. Thank and then you. One of my things that I wrote down was like, how in God's name do you remember this stuff? How do you remember everything so well? Because I am not like that. I can't remember, like, I can remember like an outfit I wore to like a seventh grade dance, but I don't remember like conversations that I had with my dad or my mom. How, that's such a gift that you have that.
I really, I almost go, well, first of all, some of it I wrote, closer to the time that it happened. So it was more fresh in my mind. Okay. And I also did it as a play. I did it as a one woman show, a version of this. And, so, you know, some of it was because it was more fresh in my mind, but really I think what I do, I almost like go into a, it's like a meditation, like a zone kind of thing. I'm not meditating by any stretch. Like, I'm not sitting here actively meditating, but
yeah,
something happens when I start the writing process that I just get into this. I think it's just a very deep place that I can, that I can just tap into it. It's like a real deep place, like a flow. And I was so surprised at how, you know, like I wanted to get the book published for so many years and, you know, so many disappointments, roadblocks, and then you finally get one. And then you realize, you know, we talk about the flow, and that's with anybody. If you're a painter, a writer, an actor, a singer, any kind of work that is creative, when you're in that flow, like, you just know it. And
yeah,
it's awesome. And it, you know, so I feel like that happened a lot with this book for me.
Well, something I loved about the book, so just so everyone knows, I don't want to give away, like, I could give away the whole story because I've just freshly read it, but your dad passed away when you had been had the worst period of your life where you're I'm sorry, but your ex-boyfriend was not a nice guy, obviously, the way he broke up with you.
Right.
Your dad, you know, got cancer, and you lost a job all at one period of time. And it's just, it's kind of like one of those things in life. I say this all the time. You just never know. Like, why do things happen all at once? Like, how much can one human being handle?
Yes.
And do you want to kind of go into that? Because it's a big part of the book.
It definitely, that's the crux of the whole thing is that, you know, I went from thinking I understood everything about my life, about where my career was going, where my relationship was going, family was stable. And then just systematically, one by one, very quickly, everything was taken away. And I went from this place of thinking, you know, that everything made sense to having no clue what I was doing and feeling like any place I tried to grab onto something, there was nothing to hold onto. And I was in somewhat of disbelief for a while and then in denial about it. And then slowly just, I had to reevaluate my entire life. And so I was also very surprised at how devastated I was at the loss of my dad. I think it's so naive that I thought that at the time, but I felt like I'm an adult. I'm an independent person. You know, I'm a successful human being. Why am I so broken by this? Like, why can I just not get up in the morning? And I mean, I just couldn't. And I felt like, where am I? Who am I? And what am I going to do? And I wandered around. I mean, I think I said this in the book too, that I, like, if you saw me, you would, on the street, I either looked like a crazy homeless person or like this angelic person that was kind of floating around like, hi, everyone. You know, like I was out of my body most of the time. And
well, nobody really tells you, sorry to interrupt, how to deal with, you know, my father also was diagnosed with cancer when I was 12 years old. And nobody tells you when you talk about cancer in the diagnosis process that, you know, your life is just not, it's precious. Like, we're not here forever. And I think just picturing you, like, I think you were on Beechwood or something eating chips when you got the phone call from your brother. That you were like on a successful TV show, right? A lot of times, like, actors, actresses in Hollywood are glorified. So you're put up on this pedestal. And then you're kind of like, well, I'm untouchable. And then you go walk into your apartment and your boyfriend's with some like girl sitting on the sofa. And then all at the same time, your dad is diagnosed. And it's kind of like, well, anybody that has like marbles in their head and any kind of like heart would have been broken. So I think that people deal with grief and cancer, especially like that diagnosis of seeing a big, strong man like your dad. I can relate when I read it.
Yes.
My dad was, you know, very successful and took care of his family, was good with money. My mom, I related so much to your mom and how funny she was because my mom was an ex-beauty queen too. And just like the pain of in the story talking about, you know, not wanting to go home to deal with what you really had to deal with was to see this big, strong dad that as a little girl, like, loved you so much and, you know, and just turn into a sickly human. It's awful.
Mm-hmm. It really is. And that thing of hearing the word cancer until it just seemed so amorphous to me before this idea of, you know, kind of this big bad wolf that isn't really real, you know, you don't understand, you know, it sounds terrible, but you really don't know what it is until it happens. And the whole process is just, you know, anyone who's gone through it, it's debilitating. It's painful in every way to watch and to go through. And I think I knew, you know, in that moment in my car at the beginning of the book, I knew that like shit was going sideways, you know? And I remember feeling like, if I could just stay right here in this car, in this parking lot, and just maybe forever, maybe I'll just never go anywhere and everything will be fine. You know, I'll just stay right here. How long can I stay right here to avoid having to actually deal with what's going on?
And then to get the news, and then what's, you know, flying back and forth, and then your friend, you know, dealing with her own or your best friend's father getting cancer at the same time.
So crazy.
And I understood, like, it's this weird thing where you don't really know how to react to things. Like,
yes,
you know, I can't even really put it into words. You put it into words way better than I could in the book, but just like, you were like, oh, I'm here to help you. I'm going to do everything that I can to help you get through this. So then I can,
right. Yes.
You know?
Yeah. It like feels like, okay, I'm going to accomplish this, because then that means I'm accomplishing something. I'm doing something. And but you know, also this idea that everyone grieves differently, and everyone needs different things and responds differently. So, you know, my desire to try to help her, which was very genuine because I love her, but it also was through this filter of me trying to scurry away from my own life, which is not really helpful to another person. You know, if you're doing something that's actively to try to not do something else, you know, like you could just energetically feel that. So I'm sure it felt very overwhelming to her. And, you know, it just, again, every time I tried to avoid it, it just comes back bigger and bigger. You know, it's like a thing they say, in AA also about, I think it's in AA, they say it, that if you, you know, if you swallow a feeling, you swallow it whole. And the bigger that you, like the more you avoid something, the bigger it gets. Or they liken it to like the monsters, like, you know, getting bigger in your closet or something like that. And I think that's really true for any kind of challenge, and grief in particular. You know, we just want to avoid it, because in our culture, we are conditioned to want shiny, happy things, and to be happy, and to be successful, and to have more, and all those things. So we want to avoid pain at all costs. And the great irony is there isn't any way to avoid it. So, you know, we have to go through it. And in one of the reasons I wanted to, was so important to me to write this book, is I feel like we, in my going through the grief, when I finally actually allowed myself to step through it all, that's how I came to the other side and have the beautiful life I have now. You know, if I kept sidestepping it, I wouldn't have the appreciation that I have for everything. I wouldn't have the kind of extraordinary relationship that I feel I have with my father now. And, you know, all those things are because I went through these challenges. So I hope that we start to feel culturally more comfortable with this discomfort, you know,
or in general, just talking about it. Like, nobody tells you, you know, what it's going to be like on your family. Nobody tells you, you know, there was one part of the book when you and your older sister got in this fight because you didn't know really how to deal. And then you ran out and saw the horse. Mm-hmm. And I pictured that scene so perfectly. It was like, you know, I mean, one thing I will say is, we're all lucky in different ways as human beings. We're put on this planet. We all have our own challenges. People go through loss and grief at young ages. People go through it at older ages. I think losing a parent in particular is never easy. I don't care what age you are. I think about it a lot with my own mother, just because I lost my dad so young. And it's just one of those things where I'm terrified of it. And I think about it a lot. But I just think that, you know, nobody tells you, like, you're going to have to see your parent suffer. You're mm-hmm. going to have to see your parent, like, at one point in the book, when he was dying and in hospice, you had to see, and I'm not going to give it away, but it was a really horrible thing to read that you and your sister had to encounter. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, like, well, you're right. Like, we celebrate, like, birth and people coming mm-hmm. into the planet, and it's like this celebration, but people leave the planet, and that should be a celebration for us. Yes. But there's no manual for all of us left to how to grieve. Like, nobody tells us like what to do. And so I think that when you wrote this book and you talk about all the things that you went through, the breakups, the one boyfriend that you had that you kept thinking you were supposed to be with. And mm-hmm. then you talk about at the very end, you know, it makes me cry thinking about it, because I need to do this is write a letter to my dad.
Yeah.
And that letter was so touching. And then you ended up, you know, now you're with your husband and you have your mm-hmm. beautiful little girl. It just really comes full circle. And I was so touched at the end by you saying, well, I had to kind of go through all of this to not care anymore. Like, I'm not afraid to get on an airplane. When it's my time, it's my time.
Yes.
I just love that. Can you go into that a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, you know, we spend a lot of time fearing these things that we think we don't want. You know, whether it's, you know, oh, I don't want to be alone. I don't want my relationship to end. Oh, I don't want to lose this job. Oh, I don't, you know, all those things. But, and these kind of random fears of, in the pandemic, of course, is like a huge thing of this. Like, yes, mm-hmm. it's very real. But we also, at a certain point, have to say, okay, how do I continue to lead my life, knowing these parameters are there, the things, how we have to be safe, et cetera. But I can't walk around afraid of something that may or may not happen. Like, what's the point of that? It just robs us of having our experience in life. And I felt like this whole process made me see how much time I had spent, you know, being afraid of various things. Like, I don't want to go to that party. I'll be uncomfortable. No one will like me. I don't know if I want to do that because I don't know if I can handle that. Or I don't know, do I really want to go all the way here? Or, oh my God, what if there are, you know, terrorists on the airplane? You know, like all these kind of random things that are ridiculous, because mm-hmm. I just felt like I had such a spiritual awakening throughout this process where I really understood the bigger picture. And I feel like my life has changed so unequivocally and so irreversibly for the good that I have this sense of a love and a joy that I connect to my entire existence. And it's not that I don't feel pain or that I don't feel sad. We have dear friends who have just gone through an unthinkable loss. And I feel that so deeply for them. And so it's not that I don't experience pain anymore. It's just that I feel like I understand what it is to be alive, and to mm-hmm. be alive is sometimes to experience pain. And it just helps to enhance our lives. You know, and that might sound strange because, again, I'm not saying to avoid, you know, that everything is like hunky dory and bright and shiny. It's actually the contrary. It's like we get it all. Everything's in. We take everything with us, you know, and that's what a fulfilling life is to me. You know, it's not
also
like, oh gosh, how do I look in these jeans? Oh, did I gain 5 pounds? Oh God, I wish it, like, who gives a shit? You know, these things are so minor.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Anyone else feel like they're talking like this this time of year and sneezing and coughing and annoying your family while you're watching TV like I'm sure I do? Well, yeah, I know that I am because my kids tend to tell me. Luckily for those of us who live with these symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease in as little as a half an hour, by the way. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that you say that because that's something I battle with, being afraid to get on airplanes and all of those things. So when I read that in the book, I was like, you know, you're right. Like, I think that I think COVID in particular really made me be like, what? Stop being afraid to get on an airplane. Stop. Yeah. You know, recently with my aunt, we had to fly back east and, I looked at her and I said this, I think, two podcasts ago. I was interviewing Lori, who's an Intuit and has gone through a tremendous amount of loss. And I looked at my aunt, you know, and I'm Irish Catholic. So, I know I read that. So tradition is a lot of times we still have open caskets. And I looked at her physical body and I realized, like, she is gone. She's gone.
She's not there. Right.
She's not there. And it put me at peace. And then reading your book, just all of the just unbelievable signs. Like, you're very lucky because I don't have these signs from my dad. I think that he is at like a giant cocktail party and like won't mm-hmm. leave and give me signs. But then I get these amazing dreams and signs from my best friend that passed away all the time.
Oh,
and I loved that your mom at one point lost a necklace, and there was a mm-hmm. gold necklace with a ruby mm-hmm. in it, and she mm-hmm. couldn't find it for 8 months. They had been on this trip and she was like, opened her closet and the necklace flew out. I'm like,
yes, yes.
Hello.
Yes. And these things, like, you can't, you know, you can't, I mean, I suppose you could make them up, but you really can't make them up. I mean, it's those kinds of things happen all the time. And I will say, you know, I touch on this in the book too, that for a period of time, I realized I was shutting it out because it felt like too much. It felt too overwhelming. And then once I realized that, and it was very like a huge part of the healing process of actually letting in whatever wanted to come in. I felt like everything sort of fell away and my dad could communicate with me. And I had this huge understanding of how thin, you know, the veils are between these worlds and the spirit. Like, our bodies are one thing. Yes, we're living in a physical body in this life, but there is so much more than just that. And I feel it all the time. I mean, you can imagine, especially in promoting this book, he's all over the place, you know, and I sense him all the time. And now that I've been more, even more open to it, my grandmother and our friends, you know, like other, I think it's a really subtle shift that if we allow ourselves to really be quiet and really be present, it starts to come in. You know, I don't know how to explain it other than that, really.
I believe in it. It does take work, because as people, I think we're just like, oh, that's weird. That's hokey. I don't want to tap into that. I'm not going to think that way. That's so weird. But then when you like, I mean, I think I got to the lowest point of my life in the past 2 years. And I talk a lot about this. And I, like you, kind of got to this point where I'm like, you know what? Like, I don't give a shit what anybody thinks of me anymore. Like, you don't think like I'm cool enough or I'm this enough or I have enough this, and I don't care. I would rather live my life. That's why I started this podcast, to try and help mm-hmm. other people. And, you know, I like to talk. Some people don't like that, including my husband. But I was like, I'm going to start talking again. I'm going to be creative. I'm supposed to do this.
And you're speaking from your soul. Like we talk about the soul's purpose, which might sound hokey, but it's quite real. It's like, you know, you're doing something you're supposed to be doing. And the more you do it and the more practiced you are at it, the more you realize it just reiterates to you that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. And then the path starts to open up and all the right things continue to happen. You know,
it's kind of like the secret.
Yeah,
the secret, which is like not the secret, but it's true. Like you do things, you try to better yourself as a human. But what my point of that story was, there was one point in the book where you talk about your dog like running up and down the stairs, and you had gone to the psychic, and you were like, I'm not, should I say hi? And like, I know you're there, or whatever it was. And I thought of myself, and this is not a lie, and I sound like a total weirdo and I really don't care, but I was walking along the wood chip path where we live, and my sign is a butterfly. So anytime I see butterflies, I think it's my best friend coming to see me. And this butterfly started like flying all around me, and then she landed on a bush, and just stopped, and I started talking to the butterfly. I was like, I miss you so much. And all these people walking by me. And I was like, oh my God, I must look like this total crazy lady. But honestly, when you get to the point where you just don't care anymore and you realize that it's like, it's so much bigger, you just, it's so freeing, right?
So freeing. And nature is a really big way to that I have found that messages like that come through. And animals, I have like a hummingbird is my with my dad.
That's your sign? Is that your sign? Yeah. Hummingbird.
And we just moved recently. Let me see if he's out there right now. Oh yeah. He's sitting right there. So just moved, and where I had set up my whole Zoom setup here, there's a big tree outside the window. Like, oh, he's got a buddy. Now there are two of them. But I would always see, as I said, that was always a sign for me. And I set up shop right here at this table. I have this lovely view of this big tree. And as soon as I sit down the first time to do an interview about the book, there's the hummingbird. And those little guys have been out there every time. And, you know, it's a reassurance thing. It's one of these things that if you believe, you don't need the proof. And if you need proof, you're just never going to believe, you know? So it's fine if people don't, if they don't, that doesn't resonate, you know, that's fine. But
well, we're all on this planet for our own journeys at our own time. So like, you know, when you were like at your point where it was like the three things at one time, that was the beginning of your journey to, you know, like going home, like going through all of these things, like, you know, having the day of the funeral with your having the eye issue, like all these things like that yes. just kept happening. It just, it took you to where you are today.
Yes. And it also, you know, for years, you know, it's when you, I've had a lot of success as an actor. I've been very fortunate. Mm-hmm. And, but that doesn't mean that I've always gotten to do the things that I've wanted to do creatively as an artist. So mm-hmm. I was always struggling in this way to be taken seriously as a writer or to try to do other kinds of work as an actress. And it was hard to get people to allow me to do that. And I think when I was younger, there was a little bit of kind of kicking and screaming about that, you know, like, why can't I? And, you know, it's hard to get sympathy when, you know, you're on a TV show, like nobody, like, don't cry for me, Argentina. Like, okay, yeah. sorry, yeah. you know? But this whole process, it was like an equalizer where I just went, this is what I want to do with my life. How do I want to walk through the world as an artist and creative person? Like, what do I want my career to really look like? And it's not that I don't want to do big comedies anymore or something. That's terrific. And I feel fortunate and I'd love to do, you know, 100 more. But what's more important to me is that I start to do this work, that I put this kind of work out into the world, this book, the film that is in development. I want to create work that touches people and that has this kind of a positive effect on humanity. So to me, it just made me more committed to what my real journey is here. You know, so when you say, yes, it was the start of my journey, it unequivocally was, you know, and, so I'm super grateful for that. And it never looks the way we think it's going to look. It never, you know, when I thought I'm going to get my book deal, we're going to have a huge party, you know, when I signed the deal. No, I was in my living room with my daughter, you know, doing distance learning and crying and my husband working in the other, you know what I mean? Like, and I toasted friends on Zoom, you know, that's what I did.
But then it worked out when it was supposed to. So like everything is always has a way of working out when it's supposed to, because that was like a lesson that you were supposed to, it wasn't supposed to happen at that time.
That's exactly.
I think that it's interesting that you bring up the acting thing. So my husband just did my last podcast while we were on vacation because I didn't.
I listened to it. I know.
Oh, you did.
That's what made me. I must have met him back.
He knows. Well, I know that I met you at. I was afraid to go up to you. I'll never forget this. Stephen Bowman had a party, and I remember you coming in.
That's the first time I met him, right? Didn't I like?
I don't know.
Like bring him a birthday cake or something crazy. Cause he told me years later and I was like, oh my God, did I do that?
Oh my God. I just remember I can remember this vivid thing is you came in and you were wearing like a fur coat or something. And I was like, oh my God, that's the girl from Clueless. And I had like the connection because of the W with my niece. Oh, and
right,
I told, but I think my husband told me he was up for something with you, or you guys knew each other somehow. Yeah, so
I feel like we do. I know one of the actresses who was on that show with him, who was on, was it called Legacy?
Yeah.
So there was a girl, an actress called Leah Moreno, I want to say. I'm not sure if that's right, but I can picture her face, and she had done an episode of Clueless before that. And so then we all would do like events, the same, kind of like weird, you know, community of when you're doing a TV show at the same time. So I feel like I definitely should have or would have met him at one of those sorts of events. But we're also up for something together.
I don't know what it was, but I thought it was interesting when he brought up on that episode, you know, I mean, we're pretty transparent about our relationship, fights, whatever it is, but you know, he's kind of shifted into like being like going into real estate, and it's hard aging in Hollywood and all the things that come with it. And just the way he's evolved as an actor. And I believe that he's still supposed to act too.
Yes.
And I think that we need to be creative. So we talk about that a lot. When you're a creative person, it means you need to be creative in different ways. So you writing this book was your way of being creative and like sending that art out into the universe. And I think I can't tell you enough, like, listeners, if you're listening, if you're grieving right now and you could be in the very beginning stages of it, or you're a year out or wherever you are in the process. I know that for me, I think you talked about this in the book too, about how you went to see that movie and Big Fish.
Yes.
And it was like, when you're going through the process of loss like that and you go to see something creative, I don't know if it's just like us as actors or whatever it is, but we can tap into things. Mm-hmm. Like art, seeing art affects me very strongly.
Yes.
Seeing a movie. And I remember seeing City of Angels with Meg Ryan years ago. And I was in the theater. I think I was on a date, but I was really young. And I was hysterically sobbing, like to the point where I couldn't breathe,
right?
Because it affected me so much. And so when I read that this in
I
the
felt
book
that too in that movie,
yeah, I felt like I was like, and then I'm not going to give it away for you guys, but when you read the book and you see what happened during that movie when you go to like buy the ticket and the Ooh. Sign, it is like the craziest thing I've ever read. That's all I'm going to say. I don't want to give it away because you have to read this book. Yeah. But
I really felt like I could not believe that that was happening. And it was one of those things of, you know, pay attention. How big do the signs have to be? You know,
it was like unbelievable. Like that, if you don't believe that there's a heaven and a God and they're on the other side and they're with us, and when you tap into it, then I don't know who you are. But my point in that long-winded blurb was, wherever you are in your grieving process or healing or trying to tap into like dreams, or wherever you are in this process of like having a parent that's been given the diagnosis of cancer or lost them, you have to read this book, because it's like you read it and you feel like you're in the middle of it, and it's just so beautifully written, and I could picture all the different scenes, and I could picture my own struggles with, you know, when my dad was sick and dying, that I didn't tell him everything I wanted to tell him, and how I wish I would have danced with him in second grade at this dance when he asked me to dance and I said no. There's so many things that we all can learn from your book. And I'm emotional as a human, so I'm sorry, but I thank you just like from the bottom of my heart for putting this out. It really, really touched me, and I'm really grateful to you. So thank you.
Thank you so much. This is, truly the greatest gift of this book has been people sharing their experiences with me. And it fulfills me so much to hear that, because that's really why I wrote it, you know, and it's so meaningful to me that you share those specific feelings with me. And I just hope that everyone who reads it gets some peace and some comfort, and feels like they can share their stories also. And, cause it feels so isolating when we're going through these things, you know, we feel like we're the only ones, and there's just no way out, you know? Mm-hmm. And there just really is. It just that you just have to go through.
There's no manual, like you said. And, you know, you talk about your meeting your friends out for dinner, and you in the book, and you say, I'm struggling, or I'm sad, or something like that. I don't know who those friends were. You didn't kind of go into the whole thing. I'm sure they're great friends, but mm-hmm. I thought about how when you really are going through those periods and you need a friend or you need to lean on other people, don't be afraid to lean on people. There are really good people out there. Yes. And like I talk about a lot, if you need to talk to somebody, go talk to a therapist.
Yes.
they're there for a reason.
I am a huge proponent of therapy, and I have done it for many years, and it has saved my life prior to this ever even happening to me, this period of time. I'm a huge believer in it. And, you know, the other thing about asking for help and sharing with friends is that it allows, oftentimes, most of the time, especially if it's someone who hasn't been through any sort of grief or challenge like this, people don't know what to say, so they don't say anything. Mm-hmm. And really not saying anything is kind of the worst thing to do. You know, mm-hmm. People worry, oh, I don't want to bring it up and like make her think about it. When the reality is you're thinking about it all the time. So someone, you know, we want acknowledgement. So you don't have to say the perfect thing. Just say something. You can say, you know, I found it really helpful to say for people to sometimes just say, I don't know what to say. I really wish I did. Like, I love you.
Yeah.
For you. I'm here, you know? And, you know, because you can't fix it. No one else can fix it. That's the reality. But
and every loss is different. Every loss is different. So you never know, like, one loss could have been something that touches somebody, but your loss in particular was a very long process of grieving. And, you know, I don't think we ever finish grieving the loss of our loved ones that were part of our souls, you know, like,
I agree.
Yeah. In closing, because I don't want to take up your, I could talk to you forever, but
I could talk to you forever too.
I know we're going to be like BFFs after this. I wanted to know, like, what you're doing now. Are you acting? Are you going to be in the movie that, or are you just producing it?
I am directing the film, and
cool.
I have written the screenplay. So no, I'm not going to be in it. It's my directorial debut.
That's
so
amazing.
We are hoping that independent films are labors of love, and so we have a great producing team and several wonderful actors attached, and we're hoping that we will get that the financing will come through before the end of the year. And so I'm working on that. I did just shoot something in New York that I'm not supposed to talk about. It's so funny how it's like, oh, you're not supposed to. It's like not that big of a deal, but it was really, really fun. And so, yeah, I mean, I certainly will continue acting, but at the moment, I'm definitely focusing on the film. And now that in-person events have started, there'll be a bookstore event at Barnes & Noble in LA that we're scheduling now. So I'm excited to start to do in-person things to promote the book too.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for that.
I think too, it's like as an actor, I'm excited to see you acting again, like whatever the new Secret New York project is, because I think these life experiences evolve like your acting. If that is like your ability to act changes. I was actually at a 4th of July party with an actress friend of ours that is very successful. And she was saying how she leaves LA to live. She lives somewhere else mm-hmm. when she's not working because she doesn't want to be surrounded with actors complaining about like not working or just talking about the craft, that you have to do other things.
Yes.
Yeah. To have the life experiences to be able to create those characters.
Completely. You said something like that. Into that effect to your husband in the episode that I listened to yesterday. And I think that it is very true. You know, I'm a much better actor today than I was 20 years ago, you know, without doubt, because there is a, you know, we put a lot of judgment on ourselves, especially as actors. It's like the worst, the worst career path ever. You know, if you don't, if you want to feel terrible about yourself, become
totally yeah
you know, we just get judged all the time, often on very perfunctory things that don't really have anything to do with our ability, but so there's also something that goes along with that sometimes then we internally try to mirror someone else or do something that we think is the way to get a role. And, you know, now when I've gone through so much of life, I'm so present that I feel like all that's like all the kind of muck is gone. So there's a real just kind of power and groundedness to, and I think that's what happens as we get older, you know, which is so ironic that Hollywood doesn't really like to celebrate aging when like that's actually where the real goods are. You know, that's
I feel like though it's getting a little bit better. Like, I mean, hearing that you're directing, I mean, just
I mean,
like,
it's the, hard
that's
to,
amazing.
It's
hard amazing.
It's hard to get the financing. Like, oh, we want to support women directors. Well, let's see. Do we want to support women directors? You know, so it's been an interesting road. But yes, I do believe that it is getting better. But it like we have to constantly keep the train moving.
I agree. Well, in closing, I just want to tell you again, if you're listening, everyone, I really am begging you. I'm pleading with you to go get this book because it helped me. I needed to read it at that exact moment. I needed to ugly cry on the plane. And Elisa, I think you're an amazing, amazing person. And I'm not kidding. I want you to be my new BFF. And I'm just so grateful. So thank you for coming on my podcast.
Thank you so much. I have loved every second of this. And I am so thrilled that you are doing this podcast at all.
Judging Megan with Megan Judge.
The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with 2 chews a day. Visit RadioBeets.com and save 15% with promo code DEAL.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best-kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.